I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Well, our guest this hour has been just about everywhere. He recently returned home after traveling, spending the last 4 months in Europe and Canada with a stop in New York. Travel blogger and Wisconsin native Gary Arndt is in Madison today to share with you some stories from his travels and to try to inspire you to travel too. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Monday, August the 15th. Gary Arndt is a travel blogger. His blog, Everything Everywhere, was named one of the 25 best travel blogs of 2010 by Time Magazine. And that's the first time we had him on the program. He's been back a time or two since then, in between his excursions. And we are happy to have him back this hour to talk about the joy of travel. We will start with talking about traveling to some of the world's heritage sites and the new sites that were just put on the World Heritage Sites list, but we will open up the conversation to travel of all kinds. Maybe your questions for Gary, maybe you have some experiences on a wonderful trip that you would like to share. Maybe you need some recommendations for a trip that you might be planning. And I'd like to know, what is the next big trip that you would like to take and why? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, or you can tweet us on Twitter, @JoyCardineShow. Everything Everywhere travel blogger Gary Arndt joins us in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for coming back. And welcome home, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, your hometown, anyway, is Appleton.
Right, that's where I grew up.
Yeah, and you have, where have you been since we last talked?
Puerto Rico, Hawaii, Slovakia, Slovenia, Czech Republic, Hungary, Italy, Andorra, Liechtenstein, Turkey, France, Germany, Spain.
Oh, my goodness.
Monaco.
And now, why those places?
I went to Puerto Rico because I've never been there before. I was in Hawaii during the Japanese tsunami, so that was kind of fun.
You were there. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. All the locals didn't think it was a big deal, but a lot of the visitors were kind of freaked out.
Oh, I certainly would have been freaked out. Were you, did you actually, were you in the area where waves were destroying things?
No.
Okay.
By the time I got there, it was actually very small. Mm-hmm. It was maybe a couple feet rise in water.
Wow.
One of the guys actually went down to the harbor in Lahaina where I was and watched it.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that's quite an experience. But you did a lot of time in Europe then, too.
Yeah, I basically spent the last 4 months in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I spent about a month of it in Spain. Was in Valencia for the Grand Prix of Europe. Got to drive in a Formula One car, which is kind of interesting. Spent a week driving around the Spanish Pyrenees and then went to the Canary Islands.
Well, that's great. Now, how long are you going to be in boring Wisconsin?
I just got back from Lake Tahoe last week. I went there for a quick trip, and then I'll be here for another week or two, and then I go to Mexico.
Oh, you're going to go to Mexico next. Okay.
That's just a short trip, and then I'll be here on and off. Nothing really long until December when I'm going to Antarctica.
You are going to go to Antarctica. One of the last times we talked, you had mentioned that you thought someday you would try Antarctica.
Yeah, so it looks like I'll be doing it in December.
Well, that'll be exciting. Yeah, that was when Cynthia Schuster, my one of my producers, went in December. Apparently, that must be the time to go to. That's the summer.
Yeah, summer there.
Yeah, summer there. Yeah. Well, this is, and I was just teasing when I said boring Wisconsin, because we have some wonderful things to see here as well.
I think no matter where you go in the world, everyone thinks where they live is boring because they're used to it. And the funny thing is, there's a lot of Wisconsin that I still haven't visited. I think I mentioned last time, the one place I haven't been is Taliesin.
Well, you got to put that on. You got to get
and
over there one of these
to
days.
Go, but I never get to. I never have been there.
Well, it sounds like you've got some exciting things going on. I thought that you were debating whether you were going to go to the Galapagos Islands versus.
Don't mind do that. Okay. Yeah, this fall I have a option of going to either the Galapagos or Machu Picchu.
Boy, That's both of those places are on my which one would I like to do? I would like to do both, but I guess your question is which one do I do first?
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's quite the dilemma to have. We wanted to talk about your past travels. We wanted to talk about your future travels. We want listeners to share their future travel ideas or some of your past dream trips. But another thing we wanted to talk to you about are the UNESCO World Heritage Sites. This is one of the things you try to see when you're out traveling. You try to stop and see these World Heritage Sites, and we found this piece that you wrote about them. I'll plead ignorance. I didn't know that there was a UNESCO World Heritage Site list.
It's not as big of a deal in the United States. Mm-hmm. There are about 936 properties around the world that have been put on the list. I think there are 18 in the United States. So compared to some European countries, we don't have nearly as many, mainly because we don't have as many old things in the U.S. Most of the sites here are national parks.
What is the UNESCO World Heritage Site list?
There was a convention that began in the 1970s. And in 1978, they began naming various important cultural and natural locations around the world to get put on this list. And basically, the list is... there's no real obligation. There are some places that have been put on it that have been taken off of a few number. But basically, it's just sort of the Hall of Fame of national parks around the world. So in the United States, Yosemite, Yellowstone, Denali, the Everglades, Grand Canyon, places like that.
Really? Around the world, you were mentioning that it could be... that it could a historical site could be a statue in a plaza.
Yeah, there is a small number. I was just in Bulgaria, and one of the ones I visited just out of Sofia was a small Orthodox church. I want to say it was maybe about 1,200 years old. And the frescoes inside made it something that was put on the list for preservation purposes.
Mm-hmm. Now, UNESCO stands for the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. And that the purpose of this is to preserve these sites?
Like I said, there's no real teeth behind it because the United Nations doesn't have any authority in these places, but these places tend to be protected, and it's also a huge boon for tourism for places that happen to get put on it, which is one of the reasons that it's so competitive to get new sites on the list.
Yeah, so why do you bother to go out of your way to visit some of these sites?
They tend to be the best in the best of... the things that there are to visit. So if you were to come up with a list of places that you would want to visit, the Great Wall of China, Angkor Wat, the Taj Mahal, these are all places that would be on the UNESCO list.
Uh-huh. And we may have already visited one of these sites without even knowing it.
Oh, yeah, there's a good chance. If you've done any extensive travels in the United States, the Statue of Liberty. The closest one to where we are right now would be the Cahokia State Mounds Park in Illinois.
Yeah. We just noticed when we knew that we were going to be talking with you that 10 new earthly wonders, it says here, have been added to the UNESCO World Heritage Site list. So there are, every year more are added? Is that how this works?
Yeah, there's a convention every year, and countries nominate locations, and there's about 10 to 25 that are added every year.
And the 10 that are on the list, boy, I don't even know if I can pronounce all of these places, but you have been to some of them. Tell us which ones you've been to.
Yeah, the ones added this year, there are two I've been to recently. One is the Ningaloo Coast, which is off Western Australia. And that is, it's one of the largest fringe reefs in the world. So in Australia, the Great Barrier Reef kind of gets all the attention, but on the western side, the fringe reef. And there I went swimming with whale sharks, which was kind of interesting.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so you didn't, do you scuba dive as well?
Oh, yeah. Oh. I've done over 100 dives around the world.
And in this particular place, you went swimming with whale sharks.
Yeah, they're the largest fish in the world, and they're filter feeders. Even so, the word shark is there. They're not dangerous. unless they hit you with their tail.
All right, so the Ningaloo Coast in Australia was one of the new historic or World Heritage sites. Well, what was the other one that you've been
to? And the other one I visited was Wadi Rum in Jordan. And if you've ever seen the movie Lawrence of Arabia, that's where it was filmed.
So, and what's special, what else is special about that place?
Oh, it's absolutely beautiful. It's an area that was geologically formed by a lot of rushing water. So you'll see things that are like, I want to say, mesas, like you'll find in, say, Arizona or Utah. But a very desolate, windswept desert floor. I stayed there two nights with in a Bedouin camp. So there are opportunities. A lot of people go to Petra if you're in Jordan. And Wadi Rum is about an hour away.
Mm-hmm. Anything else from the new list of a place or area that you want to be visiting soon?
I could say it.
All of them.
All of them, yeah.
But there isn't, you don't have plans to go to any of these anytime soon?
No. Mm-hmm. Usually what I'll do is if I'm in a particular region, then I'll try to go visit any ones that are available or that I can get to. But I, unless it's something really special like Machu Picchu, I probably won't go out of my way just for one place.
Mm-hmm. Now, why did you decide that maybe it's not like you have a next big trip once a year. You're constantly doing this. But it seems to me that a trip to Antarctica is a big trip. Why did you decide that was one you wanted to do?
Because I could. One of my the companies that sponsors me and my blog is Gap Adventures, and they have a boat that goes to Antarctica. And one of my sponsorships, part of my deal is I could pick a trip every year that I can go on, and so I'm picking Antarctica.
And why is that one that you wanted to go on?
Because it's one of the hardest places to get to. You can take a plane any time to go to any country in the world, pretty much. But going to Antarctica, there's a very set season. You can't really fly there. I mean, you can if you're on a scientific expedition, but otherwise you have to take a boat. And it's not cheap. To do it, you're looking at about $10,000 to start, and there on up, depending on how luxurious you want to be and how long you're gone. So it was a good opportunity, and I've always wanted to go to Antarctica.
And are you a fan of penguins by any chance?
You kind of have to be, because it's really the only thing there. Penguins and ice.
Well, we are talking with Gary Arndt. He is a Wisconsin native, a Wisconsin-based travel blogger at everythingeverywhere.com, one of the best 25 blogs of 2010 by Time Magazine. We're talking about his love of travel, and we'd love to hear about your love of travel. You can share your stories, maybe your recommendations for great places to visit, or if you have a question and need some advice or some suggestions from Gary, give us a call. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Do you have a next great trip planned? What's the one place that you really want to visit, your dream trip? We'd love to hear from you. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up later today, it's At Issue with John Munson filling in for Ben Marins today. After 5, John and his guest will discuss the founding and the history of Big Top Chautauqua in northern Wisconsin. That's coming up after 5 this afternoon. I've traveled there before. Near Bayfield, Wisconsin. That's a beautiful part of our state. We are talking about traveling with Wisconsin native and world traveler Gary Arndt, who documents his travels on the website, the blog, Everything Everywhere. And we are talking about traveling everywhere and everything you can discover through travel. And we welcome your calls, your suggestions, your questions for Gary, and we have many of them. So let's go to Dave in Milwaukee first. Hello, Dave.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a question, kind of a comment as well, about the distinction maybe between traveling and visiting different places. A couple of years ago, I had the opportunity to row a hand-built rowboat down the Mississippi River, and to me it was a great way to see a cross-section of America. I'm wondering if any sort of connectivity of place and culture is missed when people are kind of jet setting their way around the world.
Well, this is interesting, Gary, because part of what you like to do is to at least immerse yourself to some extent in the culture of a place you're visiting. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I've been traveling for 4.5 years now nonstop. I tell people I'm homeless, and that's not a joke. I don't have a home. And there's a debate that always goes on between the term tourist versus traveler. And some people are like, well, if you go to a Sandals resort, you're not really, you know, visiting a place. And there are all kinds of distinctions that can be made. And obviously, the more time you spend somewhere, the more you'll be able to get to know it. But that being said, I'm an advocate of any travel is better than no travel. And while staying in a high-end resort at a place isn't maybe the best way to experience a culture, I think it's better than nothing. It's better than staying at home.
Mm-hmm. And rowing a boat down the Mississippi, if that might be a wonderful experience, if that's what you'd like to do.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I have some friends right now. One are a group of other bloggers. They're going on a train trip from, I think they can start anywhere in Europe, and they have to end up in Saigon. And the goal is to make the world's longest continuous train trip where you're not backtracking at any point. So they have these extremely convoluted routes through Europe and Central Asia. I know people that have taken, you know, extremely long voyages sailing. A family that went on a bicycle trip from Alaska down to Argentina. They bicycled most of the Trans-American Highway. So there are all kinds of different adventures like that. And I think, you know, they're all... whatever you want to do, that's a great way to do it.
And in our past conversations, I remember you saying that it would be great if you could take off or be gone for, let's say, even a whole month visiting a place or places rather than just the short long weekend kind of travel that so many Americans do now.
Now, I'm a big believer that at some point in your life, whether it's after high school or college, or whether it's when you're retired, or whether it's a career break, you should try to spend several months traveling overseas at some point. And there's always the issue of quantity versus quality. The world's a very big place. I've been doing it for over 4 years, and I haven't, you know, there are far more places I have not been than places I have been. So there's this desire for some people, they want to see everything, and yet the caller's a good point. You know, how much time do you have to spend to really appreciate it and to get to know it? And that's a balance that I unless you're immortal, you're never really going to be able to resolve.
Right. I think I saw a list where you talked about where you have been and the number of, you know, countries, and you actually had a list that said that whether you actually stayed there for a amount of time or whether it was just a quick drive through without really, stopping, or just a layover at the airport.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been to Senegal, but I haven't really been to Senegal because it was just a layover. So I'm not going to claim that I know anything about it. But there are other places that I have spent, you know, I've spent almost 2 months in Japan, same amount of time in Vietnam. I spent like 4 months in Australia. In different places of different size. I mean, in some places you can't even consider it a country. Like Spain, I was just spent a month in Spain. Spain isn't really a country. I mean, it is, but the geographical and regional differences are so great that visiting Catalonia versus visiting the Canary Islands versus visiting Andalusia, totally different. And many of the things that we think of as Spain, the flamenco dancing and the bullfighting, that's just Andalusia, really. That's just that one region of Spain. So even though we like to break things up by country. You know, it's like the U.S. Mm-hmm. Visiting Hawaii is not the same thing as visiting Atlanta.
Yeah. Where, how many countries or parts of countries have you been to?
It depends how you define it. There's a group out there that keeps a list of these things, and they look at more than just, say, countries in the United Nations, and they have like 360 different places. I've been to 101 of those.
No, more than I've been. Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to George in Milwaukee next. Hello, George.
Hi. There's an event that's been going on for about the last 25 years, and it's picked up speed now in North America. It's in Europe. It started as European Heritage Days, and the idea basically is to open up a large number of buildings in different cities and communities, like over a weekend period, where people can come inside buildings that they might not usually be able to get into or see spaces inside them that they can't often get into. In North America, this started in Toronto in 2000, and has been very successful there. They have 50 communities in Ontario that do it now. New York City does it. Denver's doing it. And Milwaukee's actually going to have its first one the last weekend of September. It's called Doors Open Milwaukee. It's going to open up about 100 buildings in the downtown area free of charge to the public for them to come in and see areas that they might not be familiar with. I'm just wondering if your guest has ever gone to any of these kinds of events.
I've been in, I think I was in Paris one day when all the museums and buildings were open like that. But that was just through happenstance. I just happened to have been there. One thing I know that's done nationwide is that I think a couple weekends every year, the National Park Service will have free admission to all the national parks in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was in the spring that, when they last did it.
Yeah, there's a day when that happens. But George, what sorts of places are going to be opening their doors in Milwaukee that don't usually open their doors?
Sure. Well, for instance, people will be able to go to the top of the U.S. Bank building, which is the tallest building in the state, to go to their observation deck or maybe go down into the locker rooms of the Bradley Center where the Bucks and Marquette have their locker rooms. Folks might be able to go to the top of the Bell Tower in City Hall, see some great new architecture in Milwaukee, get tours of Wisconsin's own distillery. So lots of different things going on.
And when is this going to be? Do you know?
Yeah, September 24th and 25th.
That sounds great. Thank you very much for that. And Carl on Facebook writes, I'm thinking about a trip to Frankfurt, Germany next spring. Do you have any suggestions of places to see? How about tips for customs and actual traveling? I do not speak German, by the way.
You shouldn't have too big of a problem in Germany speaking English, which is not to say that everyone speaks English or they all speak it fluently, but Germany is one of the better countries as far as English adoption. As far as what to actually see in Frankfurt, I was in Frankfurt for business like 10 years ago, and then that was about it. So other than going to a Thai restaurant for a business dinner, I don't know a whole lot about Frankfurt. Yeah.
Any other place in Germany that that you loved or remember fondly?
I haven't really spent that much time in Germany. Mm-hmm. I made two really quick. I had to do a really bizarre layover in Berlin about 2 months ago where I had to switch airports at 3 a.m. And then I made a brief. I spent about a week in Switzerland. And one of the places we visited was just over the border from Basel.
All right. Well, Carl, have fun in Frankfurt. Gary can't help you out on that one, though. Lynn in La Crosse is with us. Hello, Lynn.
Hi there.
Hi, Lynn. Where do you want to go?
South Korea, and I'd like to know, I'm not going to go this year, but next year I'd like to know what season, what time of year is the best time to go.
Do you remember MASH?
Yes.
They always complained about it being really hot in the summer and really cold in the winter.
Yeah.
That's true. I was there in December of 2007, and I was not prepared for the cold weather, and I ended up cutting my trip to South Korea short because it was so cold.
Wow.
So I would definitely go in the spring or the fall.
Okay.
And one of the places I would very much recommend is a city called Gwangju in the kind of in the south. It's maybe like an hour from Busan. But that is the former royal capital of South Korea, and I don't know. It's a fair train ride from Seoul if you're going to be going there, but it is to South Korea maybe what Nara or Kyoto would be to Japan. So it's the old royal capital. Many of the burial mounds, many very old monasteries are there, and I thought it was really the highlight of South Korea for me.
Oh, very good. Do you find that because South Korea is expensive? Or
Not nearly as bad as Japan.
Okay.
But that it's been, like I said, 4 years since I've been there. So I'm sure it's probably gotten a little bit more expensive, but it's affordable compared to, say, Japan.
Mm-hmm. And English, needing English?
If you anything in the tourism industry, you'll find people speaking English. And you'll also notice that there's a lot of English language schools in South Korea. Parents tend to be pretty fanatical about their kids learning English because they see that as the road to success in getting a job with anything international. So you should be okay.
Good luck to you, Lynn. Thanks for the call. Speaking of the expense of travel, now you're a professional traveler and have sponsors helping with the costs of your travel. Do you have any tips on how we might make traveling more affordable?
The number one thing is where you go. For example, I was just in Switzerland, and the cost of a McDonald's value meal in Zurich, it was $15 when I was there, and someone just told me it's up to $17 now.
For McDonald's value meal?
Yeah. Not even supersized. But that is solely due to the weakness of the dollar right now and the strength of the Swiss franc. And so to find the places, like I was also just in Romania and Bulgaria, you could get a 2.5 liter bottle of beer for anywhere from $1 to $1.50. So it's extremely affordable. I mean, they're both in the EU, those countries. I'm sorry, Switzerland is not in the EU, but they're both European. But there's an enormous price difference. Likewise, if you go to Central America, Southeast Europe, you're going to spend much less money than if you go to more developed places. Australia right now, Japan, these are all very expensive, primarily because the weakness of the dollar.
So, for example, one of your next places where you might visit, South America, that would be a better deal or not?
For the most part, yes. Mm-hmm. Chile is a bit more expensive because it's a bit more developed and their economy is doing well. But if you go to other places like Ecuador, which actually uses the dollar as their currency, it's much, much less.
Do you think that the expense keeps a lot of people from traveling?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that they look at the newspaper and they see package deals, and then they extrapolate that out and they think that they couldn't do it. But if you just don't take a package tour, if you shop around for your for your tickets, if you're flexible with time and you're willing to stay in maybe not a luxury hotel, but maybe a 2-star hotel, you can save a lot of money.
Really? Yeah, I guess are those different package deals, though? Sometimes I sometimes see trips to Mexico to an all-inclusive, airfare included, hotel included, food included, and it actually seems kind of cheap. Is that just because it's Mexico?
Partially, and because Mexico right now is desperate for tourists. There's so much bad news coming out of Mexico, and a lot of people are afraid to go there, and so they have a lot of space opened up, and so they're desperate to bring people in.
Do you have any advice along those lines? Is it dangerous to travel to Mexico?
I would not go there if I want to do a drug deal.
I don't want to do that.
I mean, that's the primary problem in Mexico right now is it's drug violence. Mm-hmm. And most of it is happening in the north. So if you go to some of the tourist regions like Cozumel or places like that, it's not nearly as bad. And from what I've seen, they're not targeting tourists. So, I've also been told by people who have spent a lot of time in Mexico to be careful when you're taking a taxi, say, in Mexico City. Because there's problems sometimes with kidnapping. But for the most part, if you just don't be flashy, don't announce yourself as an American, and use common sense, I think you're fine.
All right, Gary, I'm going to ask you to help me figure this one out. I am planning a trip. I'm not exclusively planning it, but I'm going to try to give some options to a group of about 8 women about my age, and it's a big girlfriend's trip, and we want to go somewhere tropical in the wintertime. We want to go somewhere warm when it's cold here, and it's a birthday celebration type thing. But we're looking at Bahamas, Jamaica, Mexico, or do we want to go to Mexico? Any ideas on a place that we might want to go in terms of just someplace warm to beach it and maybe get a little bit of culture here and there?
If you want to stick to the Caribbean for culture, I would recommend Curaçao. It's a country in the Kingdom of Netherlands, but you have no problem speaking. Everyone there speaks 4 languages, English being one of them, so you'll have no problem. And very much a colonial vibe in Willemstad, which is the capital. It's very easy to get to as far as flying. 2 things you might not have thought of. One is the Canary Islands, which is off the coast of Africa, but it's part of Spain. And
ooh.
There are no, there's a direct flight from Miami, but I think it's only running in the winter, which may be fine. A lot of people don't think of the Canary Islands, but it's basically Hawaii for Europe. Very similar climate, very similar geology, very nice place to visit. A lot of Americans don't go there, but there's a very developed tourism infrastructure, primarily for Germans, Scandinavians, and the British.
Good to know. All right. Next we go to John in La Crosse. Hello, John.
Hi. I guess I'm like you. I really love to travel. But my major goal is visiting people who are not part of the world culture, are living maybe in traditional ways. Have you done some of that?
Yeah, one of the places that I always remember the most is I visited the island of Rennell in the Solomon Islands. And not a lot of people go to the Solomon Islands to begin with, or even know where it is. And not many people go to Rennell, which is, if you're not familiar, Solomon Islands is where the Battle of Guadalcanal was fought in World War II. And I went to Rennell, which is a small island off the main chain, and I asked the people there how many tourists they get a year, and they said 10. And so I went to the far end of this island, and I stayed there for several days and got to know some people in the villages, and it was a very interesting experience because they're very, very isolated.
That's Micronesia, right?
That's in the Solomon Islands. The Micronesia would be north of the equator. A little bit more. But I've also been to Micronesia, which is also a really great place to visit and very under-traveled because it's so hard to get there.
Uh-huh. Well, thanks.
Sure.
All right. Thank you very much, John, for the call. We're welcoming your questions for our guest, Gary Arndt, who is a world traveler and blogger. He runs the blog Everything Everywhere. And he's on his way to going everywhere in his travels. And we welcome your input, maybe your recommendations of great places to visit at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can share your greatest travel experience. You can tell us where you want to go someday. Or just share your love of travel as we talk with Gary. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up after 9 o'clock, it's All Things Political with Kathleen Dunn and her guest. She'll be welcoming in the Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Craig Gilbert. We'll talk with her about the latest local, national, and international political headlines. All Things Political coming up after 9. We're talking about all things travel related. We are talking with a Wisconsin-based travel blogger. He is sharing his love of travel, and you're invited to share your stories and your questions, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Gary Arndt is a blogger at everythingeverywhere.com, one of the best 25 blogs of 2010, named by Time magazine. He just got back from spending the last 4 months or so, mainly in Europe, but some other places too. And you are off, Gary, to where, when next?
I do a short trip to Mexico later this month, and then I'm going to go to Anaheim. I'm speaking at a North American Travel Journalists Association conference, and then the end of September in Toronto for a United Nations Travel and Tourism Day event.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you're really going to make the rounds. And then you forgot to mention the Minnesota State Fair that I read about that you're going to be visiting soon.
Yeah, I'll be when I come back from Mexico, and then I'll go to the Minnesota State Fair for a while.
That'll be interesting to compare. Rick in South Range is with us. Hello, Rick.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I spent a couple of weeks visiting my daughter in Quito, Ecuador a few years ago when she was studying there, and I saw lots of vendors, lots of travel agencies on the street offering trips to the Galapagos. And I heard you say that's on your bucket list, either that or Machu Picchu. I'd love to see the Galapagos Islands, but I'm curious to know, I have two questions. Would you think it would be ill-advised to go to Quito or Guayaquil and make your travel arrangements to the Galapagos on the spot as opposed to having it prearranged? And the second question, how would you recommend seeing the Galapagos? Big cruise ship, small, little quaint vessel, or stay on the island and take day trips?
I would have no problem going to Quito and arranging things there. That is very common all over the world. The way the economy works for these things is you'll go to an agent, and what they do is they work with various tour operators, and then you pay them, they give them a voucher, they get maybe 10%. And so I've done that many places around the world. I did it in Vietnam. You go to Hanoi and they have trips to Ha Long Bay, and you can get them almost anywhere. You can get them at hotels, all over the world. You'll find that's a very common way of doing things. As far as how to do it, I would say as a general rule of thumb, the smaller, the better. The larger the group you're with, you're going to get rushed. I was on a cruise ship in May and we went around Italy, And I almost always travel by myself. And I got put on a tour bus with like 50 people, and there were like five cruise ships, and you have thousands of people all hitting Pompeii and these other places at the same time, and it just wasn't fun.
Yeah, so, you don't like the being in a large group.
Yeah, as a general rule, I would say stick with the smaller number of people you can.
And what would you define as small? A couple of dozen or a couple of hundred?
Eight.
Oh, eight?
I mean, yeah, literally, once you get... You know, if you have 50 people on a tour bus, then that group leader is primarily hurting you more than anything else, because there's a couple people that are going to be stragglers taking a picture and talking, and that is really what their job becomes. I went from Budapest to Istanbul 2 months ago, and we had a group of 12 people plus a tour guide, and that was a fine number. It's small enough where you know everyone, and you can talk to everyone, and you can all sit down and have dinner. But once you get beyond that number, then it becomes very difficult. But if it's on a ship or something, obviously eight people on a ship, that's, you know, that's a bass boat more than anything else. But I would still say that the smaller the better, whatever that number may be.
Well, thank you for your advice.
All right. Thanks very much, Rick. And that sounds pretty nice. Let's go next to Roland in Pewaukee. Hello, Roland.
Hello.
Hi.
Good morning, Mr. Arndt. Early December, I was in Wadi Rum. And you're one of the other few people I heard of who've ever even been there.
Yeah, it's wonderful, isn't it?
Yes, it was. Very enjoyable. But also a question, you've not been to many places in Germany. Have you been to Ulm in southwestern Germany?
No, I have not.
Fantastic city. Many Germans go there for their vacations. Also happens to have a famous church called Münster with the tallest steeple in the world.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I really do want to go to Germany because my heritage is half German.
Uh-huh.
And so it's, I remember my great aunt and my great grandmother spoke German, and it's a place I'd really like to go and see for that reason.
One other quick thing. I was in Lima, Peru years ago, and went Protestant, but went to the cathedral on a Sunday morning, and the archbishop was there, and it was, I don't know, the 300th anniversary of a fire brigade or something, very elaborate. And after the service, they process out onto the front, and the church is built on a platform about 4 feet high. And all of the fire engines from that brigade, which were 20, 30, 40 of them, were lined up in front, all of them with their sirens going at the same time, while the bishop walked, archbishop went down and was blessing them with holy water.
Those local celebrations are great, and you'll find them all over the world. I was just in Spain, and it seems like every little village has their own thing. The running of the bulls is very famous. In Valencia, they have the Fallas Festival, where they build these big wooden sculptures and then they burn them down. La Tomatina, you've probably seen it, the big tomato fight they have. I was in this tiny, tiny little village on the island of La Gomera, and their celebration is they build these bonfires through the city, and then you jump over them.
Wow. You jump over bonfires.
Yeah, and that's what they do. So there are these unique celebrations you'll see almost everywhere. And if you can time it just right, those are great things to do.
Roland, thanks very much for the call. Gary, is it? Did I read that Machu Picchu is on a list of endangered cultural sites? That you know, that it's, you know, maybe there might be restrictions placed on tourism because of the number of people who are, I guess, trampling it?
It's one of those things that has become a victim of its own success. We're celebrating the 100th anniversary of it being, air quote, discovered this year by Hiram Bingham. And since then, it's become this enormous popular attraction. Hundreds of thousands of people visit every year, and that takes a toll. A lot of people coming through. So they're thinking of putting some restrictions on it. Same with the Galapagos Islands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in order to, it's a very pristine environment, and to ensure that it stays that way, they're thinking of putting some restrictions on it.
Yeah, it was recently, I guess, a year or two ago in the Cancun area, and we did go to the Mayan pyramids, and they had stopped people from actually climbing the stairs up to the top of these pyramids because of the wear and tear.
You find that all over now. There are certain restrictions placed, and there are some places I've been where I wish they would put more restrictions. A good one is the Sistine Chapel.
Oh, yeah.
Where the first time I was there, it was fine. The second time I was there, I said, like, I was on a cruise and we went on a bus, and there was just thousands of people packed in like a dance hall, all talking. And that many people in a room like that over time, the sweat, the heat, you may not think it's very much, but over millions and millions of times, it adds up.
back to the phones, and Bob in Madison is with us now. Hello, Bob.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for taking my call. On my bucket list is to go to Hudson Bay, Canada. Has your guest ever been there?
I've been to a lot of places in Canada, but I haven't been up to Hudson Bay.
And now why, Bob, is Hudson Bay on your
bucket list? When I grew up in England, and geography was my top subject, and I, from that point on, I've always wanted to travel to Hudson Bay, Canada.
Well, I guess.
Yeah, I would certainly make the effort to do it. It's very doable. One place where you can do it is in Churchill, Manitoba. That's one place I was considering going, which is one of the best locations to actually observe polar bears.
Really? Wow, yeah. That would be something.
So if you want, that may be a good place to do it. There's a train that goes from Winnipeg up to Churchill, and it's. I've known people that have done it. They say it's just a beautiful journey, and then when you get up there, you can see polar bears.
And how about driving?
How about where, Bob?
About driving there.
I don't know of any roads off the top of my head, but I'm almost certain that it's possible. It's just a matter of what your destination is.
I drive for a living, and that's one of my bucket lists is to go to church, Hudson Bay, Canada. Probably drive.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Bob, for sharing that.
I was actually just in the Canadian Yukon about a month and a half ago. Got to go to the Arctic Circle. And when you get into northern Canada like that, your options for driving become very limited. There's not a lot of roads available. The roads that exist are gravel. And so you have to make sure to carry a spare tire with you because the odds of you getting a flat are pretty good. But it's a really, really beautiful area.
Thank you, Bob, for the call. John in Gordon is with us. Hello, John.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I would like to travel to Ireland, and I assume you've probably been there.
No, I haven't been to Ireland either. This is
you've been
today.
To hundreds and hundreds of countries, but some yeah, it's just one of those things is that you've been some places, but not Ireland. John, why do you want to go to Ireland?
Well, it's due to my heritage, principally. I would like to go to County Longford, but I would like to travel on my own hook and do some bed and breakfast, maybe rent a car. I just thought perhaps you would have a tale or two about that.
I know some great people to ask. There's some people out of Milwaukee, and they run a podcast called the Irish Fireside Podcast, and they spend half their time in Wisconsin and half their time in Ireland, and they are basically Irish tourism experts. And I would check out their website and contact them, and they know Ireland, and that's what they do, and they would be the ones to be able to help you with that.
Did they have a name of a website that you mentioned there?
I'd have to check it, but I know their podcast is the Irish Fireside Podcast.
The Irish Fireside Podcast. What a great idea. John, thanks very much for the call. So, I mean, I don't mean to put you on the spot. I mean, you haven't been to Ireland. Why not?
I just haven't been there because I get this all the time. People, they'll write me and they say, why haven't you been to India? I just haven't been there yet.
But you plan on someday, one
day. Oh, yeah. The world's a big place. Like, I haven't been to mainland China. I was going to, but when I was going to go, it was just before the Olympics, and they stopped issuing visas. So... Mm-hmm. I had to end up going somewhere else, and I just haven't been back there yet.
Yeah. John, have fun in Ireland. Scott in Green Bay is with us now. Hello, Scott.
Good morning.
Morning.
Yeah, I just got back from a trip to Paris, Cinque Terre, and Rome. Spent some time in all three locations, which was just fantastic. One of my favorite little spots to go, and some people see it as more of a stop-off point in the Caribbean, is Jost Van Dyke in the British Virgin Islands. It's quite small, but very laid back, beautiful beaches, just a lot of fun. And our next trip is actually to Belize next spring, and I was just wondering if your guests had been there or had any insight as to Belize.
I'm going to the Virgin Islands, actually, the U.S. and British Virgin Islands, hopefully in November. Mm-hmm. So I haven't been there yet, and I haven't been to Belize yet either. But if you look at a map of the places I've been, I've spent a lot of time in the Pacific, a lot of time in Asia, a lot of time in Europe, and kind of Latin America, Caribbean is sort of the next area I'm going to be focusing on.
Mm-hmm. And Belize is a place I would love to visit too, Scott. Why did you decide on that place?
Probably our favorite place is St. John, and we've been there quite a few times, and it's, it's a national park. It's only about 4,000 residents. 80% of the island is a national park. You can't build on it. And Belize has a lot of resorts and just a lot of natural beauty. So some of the small towns, San Pedro, Plasencia, Dangriga, seem to have the same vibe, I guess, as St. John does. And couple that with an English-speaking country, it makes it pretty easy, it sounds like, to navigate around.
All right. Scott, thanks very much.
Belize is becoming a lot more popular. I think primarily for Americans because it is the only English-speaking country in Central America.
It is.
And so it's still affordable. Yeah, it used to be British Honduras, and so that was kind of their little chunk of Central America.
I read about a jaguar sanctuary being somewhere in Belize, but maybe I'm mistaking that for another place.
What it's really known for is its diving. The reef in Belize is probably second only to the Great Barrier Reef, I think, in terms of size.
That sounds good to me, too. Leo in Oshkosh is with us. Hello, Leo.
Hi, I was just going to suggest, I know you were talking about yourself and the gentleman traveling all over, but a friend of mine and his wife, she's a well-known artist, they would take groups to Eleuthera, and I'm not sure, I think that's down in the Caribbean, but it's great for diving, the pristine waters and so on, they love it there. And the other thing I was going to suggest is looking into the publication, the magazine Islands, Islands. I get it, and it's just great, and all the questions you yourself expressed, they're answered in there. I mean, it tells about places and suggestions and companies and everything, so I was just going to suggest.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much, Leo. You made a quizzical expression, Gary, when he said the island that he mentioned. Are you
Eleuthera?
Not from Eleuthera, yeah. Yeah,
not familiar with it.
And it sounded like he wasn't exactly sure either, so we won't pursue that. But maybe you can talk about when somebody wants to go somewhere for any reason, how would you recommend we research or plan or, you know, get more information on even zeroing in on a place?
Well, the obvious thing is the internet. But I think the biggest thing is to figure out where you want to go first and before you begin researching and to also look at places you might not have even thought of. There are a couple of places that are obvious tourist destinations. Oh, we're going to go to Cancun. We're going to go to Cozumel because those are the things that are pitched to you in the newspapers and on the billboards. But if you do a little bit of research, you'll find that there are places like Fiji or places like Bonaire in the Caribbean that not many people go to, but they can be very, very affordable. And when you get off the beaten track a little bit and visit some of these places, I think you'll find that it's just a really great experience.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Bill looked it up, my producer, director, Bill Martins, and it is an island in the Bahamas. The Bahamas have a lot of islands.
Yeah, it was like 800, I think.
And he also found out that the website for more information on Ireland, the Irish travel experts you mentioned, irishfireside.com. So
there you go.
We have a minute to go. What are you looking forward to most, Gary, coming up in your next travels?
More of the same, actually. Yeah. Antarctica is really the big thing, and then hopefully the Galapagos. Looking to do some more kind of adventure travel.
So you're going to be back, next summer? When are you going to be back?
I think I'm going to be doing a lot of shorter trips for the next couple months. So I'll be coming back and forth from Wisconsin and then hopefully some longer ones next year.
Well, we'll have to have you back and Cynthia Schuster can compare notes on Antarctica with you when you get back from there.
Sounds good.
All right. Gary Arndt, Wisconsin-based travel blogger at everythingeverywhere.com. We've provided a link to his blog, his website, on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page and WPR.org/joy. Thanks to Rob Ferret, to Bill Martins, and to Chris Molina for producing this hour. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas, County, Monterey, Faraday, Santa Fe, Tallapoosa, Glen Rock, Black Rock, Little Rock, Oskaloosa, Tennessee, Chicopee.